Hello and welcome to our portal extravaganza from Banter on the Parkway. I am your host, Brian, from BannersOnTheParkway.com. I am joined, as always, by a man who has never been in the transfer portal. Brad, why was it that you did not transfer somewhere where you could have played more during your illustrious college basketball career?
Well, because by the time I did get around to playing in college after I had rehabbed one injury, I was already in my fifth year. And I felt like any more college at that point would have been a little bit of overkill. Fifth year, fourth school. You know, it just felt like the time was right to announce my retirement after 10 very exciting appearances on the court that anybody who took a brief concession break missed. And, you know, not jump into the portal. I think there would have been some interest from high school teams, but that would have been about it.
Yeah.
My NIL wouldn't have been good, I don't think. I did have a Razor, a Motorola Razor, back when it was really cool to have one of those. So maybe I could have gotten Motorola, maybe.
I have it's come full circle. I have a Motorola Razor now, a flip smartphone. So Motorola, if you want a plug every week, hit us up. We are for sale to the highest bidder. Now we're also joined by Braden. Braden, I mean, I think this is the first pod we've done since you've just gone completely bald. You just went ahead and shaved it all. Is that so you can look more like Joel? And when you insult people, be like, oh no, that was my crass older brother, the older version of me.
I mean, that's a decent tactic, I suppose. I usually, if I do get a good chirp out there, I got to take credit for it because I don't get those very often. I feel like Yule kind of suffers from success in that department, or he's just a gigantic tool. You can make your pick on that. But, yeah, when I went ahead and shaved the head, I did not use Motorola as the razor for this particular job. I used Norelco, I believe. I'm sure Motorola makes a great product there. But yeah, just not for me. So also Norelco, maybe hit us up.
Yeah, I think Norelco. Or, I mean, Lathan, like, you'd be open to switching to Gillette if they hit us up, correct?
If the price is right. I mean, I'll sell anything. I'm more of the modern type. Like, I'll bounce around, find the right fit for me, get my bag. I mean, I respect Brad's hustle of grinding it out somewhere for a extended period of time. I don't know if you've heard a bunch of old white dudes talking on Twitter, Brad, but that's a product of a different, more mature age. So I respect you for that, but I'm just trying to stay in tune with the times and get my money up.
Oh no, old white dudes would have hated me. Like I said, I was on my fourth school while I continued to look for somewhere where it really fit.
Yeah.
Too much bouncing around for the old white crowd. They would not have appreciated it. I have an idea, I think, though, for a commercial for Motorola where one of us tries to shave the head with the razor, and then maybe they could say, like, it's good for everything else.
Okay, let's keep that idea under wraps and pitch that to them, okay?
I was going to say, I do want a certain level, if there are any advertisers listening, I do want a certain level of creative control here. You know, I'm not a stooge. I'm not just going to read your boilerplate language. We have good ideas here.
Unless
you
they
know, they're just unpopular. They're good, but unpopular. So, I don't know, society's fault. Anyway, so looking at Xavier right now, obviously the big news is the transfer portal. We've still got a week for players to enter the transfer portal. There are three players who played for Xavier last year who haven't yet. So, you know, hopefully they're not in late entrance into the transfer portal. But as of right now, several players who have entered the transfer portal have found their next school. Cam Kraft is going to Miami of Ohio, reunion with Travis Steele, who originally recruited him to Xavier. Tachi Enzi is going to Penn State. Lazar Djokovic, Charleston. Reed Ducharme is headed to Siena, and Sasha Shani is headed to University of Illinois, Chicago. Do you guys find any of those surprising at all, I guess? Couple of former Xavier coaches picking up former Xavier players with Kraft going to Miami and Djokovic going to Charleston. I don't know. Do you guys have any comment on those guys?
NZ to Penn State is interesting to me. Penn State struggled this year after having a really good year the year before. I mean, kind of struggled. They were 77th in the Ken Pom, but they didn't really sniff the tournament. He showed a lot, I think, over the last handful of weeks, last maybe 3 weeks of the season. But he's really extremely raw, so I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I'd really like to see him stick at X and see what he would develop into. I'm not sure that he's going to get the same level of coaching from Mike Rhodes at Penn State, but he's the one I guess I have my eye on. I think Djokovic is going to be a 15-7 guy for Charleston.
Well, thanks to Brad for stealing my answer. I like the Djokovic move to Charleston. I think he'll be fun to watch there. Outside of that, I don't find any of these too surprising. Cam Kraft could not stay healthy, and when he was healthy, he couldn't get a whole lot of run with X. So watching him at Miami with our boy Travis Steele, I think that could be fun. I really just like watching random mid-major games or low major. Miami and Charleston, I feel like those will both be fun to watch. Watch some former X boys get out there and maybe get a little more run than they were accustomed to, but I mean, outside of that, I don't think any of these are too surprising. I think the biggest surprise is that Brad Colbert has not landed a massive NIL deal at one of the top five schools in the country yet.
Yeah, you think with as much roster movement as Duke has had, I'm sure they've been in contact. The thing that I think is a holdup is Kentucky's also had a lot of roster movement as well, so I think probably it's between those two for Brad Colbert. Whoever doesn't get Kobe Brea, I think is probably going to pivot to Colbert. No, I think Cam Kraft to Miami, I think that could be a fit if he can stay healthy. When he was healthy as a freshman, I thought he showed a good nose for the ball and came in with a really good reputation as a shooter. So I think being at that MAC level, I think he could do really well. And yeah, I think the obvious one is Djokovic. I think he's going to blow up at Charleston. And I think Chris Mack is a really good coach. So I think he's going to probably end up being a guy who gets back in the portal at some point and goes somewhere huge. Maybe Xavier, who knows? Anyway, so that leaves Des Claude, Yidish Namicha, Abu Usman, and Brad Colbert still in the portal. Obviously, the big name there is Des Claude, who jumped in the portal the most recently. And we'll talk about Xavier's incomings and in just a second. But it seems like there will probably be a significant amount of interest in Des Claude. He did average 16 points a game at a high major last year. So anyway, those four guys, we still wait on their landing place. But incoming, Xavier, in order of signing, I guess, has gotten Marcus Foster, not the Marcus Foster who hit the game winner in the 2017 Big East semifinal. When I saw Xavier got Marcus Foster, I was like, no, he burned that bridge. actually, I was like, yeah, sign him and then leave him on the bench the entire season. And, you know, I hope the camera pans. Anyway, it's a different Marcus Foster. I checked. Then they signed John Hughley IV from Oklahoma, Dante Maddox from Toledo, and most recently Ryan Conwell from Indiana State. So these four guys, I mean, one is coming from a fellow high major. Three are making the step up from the mid-major level. Brad, can you just kind of break down, I guess, on those first two, Foster and Hughley, what to expect from each of them? And then Braden, I think Maddox and Conwell are probably the two more likely to play a prominent role next season. So, Brad, go ahead. I mean, Foster and Hughley are both, I think, signings that Xavier fans were excited about at the time, and I think maybe they faded a little bit into the background with the two later signings.
Yeah, I think Foster, the first thing that jumps out about him is he's one of those dudes that looks like he was cut out of a block of granite. He's 6'4", but he's built. Indiana and Cal were both in on him. He struggled to shoot a little bit last year, but as Joel pointed out in his article about him, his usage rate went way up last year. He was kind of the focal point of the offense for Furman, which he won't be at Xavier. He's a good defender, and he's nails at the line. I think that he's a good pickup for a team that needs guard depth and needs some guard size. I think we're going to see a lot of Trey Green this year, and he's just a little guy. Foster rebounds really aggressively for a guard. I think that'll be interesting to see because Xavier's guards last year were, with the exception of the way Quincy Olivari got on the defensive glass, not particularly involved in the rebounding. Des Claude was a surprisingly poor rebounder, and I think Foster will help fill in for that a little bit. This is not a Des Claude slander. This is a safe space for Des Claude here, unlike most of Twitter. And I think that brings us then to Hughley, who, despite being the fourth Hughley, is probably my favorite. He's a big that is big. He's 6'10", 275. The man is going to fill up some space down there. Really, really good at the rim. Pretty deft touch from deep. Doesn't shoot a lot from out there, but shot almost 40% in admittedly a really small sample. The one thing he really loves to do on the court is hit other people, which is maybe not conducive to his playing the kind of minutes that Xavier's going to need. The one thing I think that's really interesting with him is that he's coming in to kind of fill that role that we thought Abu Usman would last year. And I think that he's another guy who would be excellent playing maybe 15 to 20 minutes, doing his thing. He won't really, well, I'd say he wouldn't have to worry about fouling out, but the way he fouls, he may have to worry about fouling out in 15 or 20 minutes. You know, ideally he's given a break to Hunter or Fremantle down there, and he's got the ability in around the rim and outside to really have an impact. I mean, he shot 70% at the rim last year, so he can definitely play. But again, he has his limitations. He's really good for the role he's currently in. But if Zach Fremantle's legs betray him again, or something happens to Jerome Hunter again, he's going to be in that same spot Abu Usman was, and that's going to be a challenge for him the same way it was Usman. Most importantly, though, he is from Cleveland. So in my mind, that automatically makes him a lot better than he probably actually is.
Yeah, I think with Hughley, you look at, I agree, he's kind of coming in to fill that same role Usman did. And Usman did a little more work on the offensive glass than I think Hughley has did at least last year. I think you look at his 2022 season at Pitt, and he looks pretty ideal for that role. But he's battled a few injuries. The one thing, though, even at North Texas, Usman shot about 10% worse at the rim than Hughley did last year at Oklahoma, going up against Big 12 big men. So I think he'll probably be a significant upgrade offensively, which is, I think, where a lot of the frustration with Usman came from, is just he was not efficient around the rim. The other thing is with Hughley, and with all these guys, that it's going to be a theme. He shot 75% from the line last year. Out of the four players Xavier has gotten out of the portal so far this season, that is the worst percentage by about 6 percentage points. And it's still a very good percentage for a big. So Xavier is adding people who, when they get to the free throw line, do well there, which I think was a problem last year. Xavier left a few games at the line. So, Braden, the last two guys, I mean, I think they were both big splash signings, Dante Maddox Jr. and Ryan Conwell. Can you just break down what each of those guys brings to the table? And if we're allowed to pronounce it Dante Maddox Jr., I know it's not how it's actually supposed to be pronounced, but Xavier tradition.
I mean, yeah, when I initially read it, when he was confirmed, I read it as Dante Maddox. Yeah, both of these guys can shoot and shoot and shoot. Maddox, I don't know if you've seen his highlight reel that he posted, or is it highlight reel, a mixtape, whatever they call it these days. I don't know what these kids are doing. He has got deep range. He will pull from just about anywhere. And last year, 40% of the time it went in. The year before that, he shot 45%. The dude can just fill it up. He's not an especially big guard, 6'2", 195. But he can, I mean, he can get hot and take games over. He can shoot well inside the arc. And then, as you already kind of alluded to, really good free throw shooter, shot 86% last year and shot 123 free throws on the season, which, just for reference, Quincy Oliveri shot 183 free throws last season. These two guards coming in, they both get to the line a lot, specifically Maddox and Conwell. Conwell shot 40% from three last year with Indiana State. He kind of, I don't want to say he got lost, but he was the second leading scorer behind Chubby Jokic with Rexpex, that Robbie Avila guy. But Conwell was a very, very big part of that team as well. He shot 260 threes last year and only 150 shots from two-point range, which is the kind of shooting mentality I can get behind, honestly. He could also fill it up. He could score from just about anywhere. He shot 60% inside the arc. Took pretty good care of the ball. Doesn't really get on the glass at an elite level, but does rebound decently defensively for a guy his size. He's a little bit bigger than Maddox. I think he played more of the kind of a three role as opposed to just a straight up two guard. He's got a little bit more of a diverse offensive bag. Yeah, I mean, I think these were both huge, like, home run signings. I especially liked Sean Miller tweeting out that picture of a turkey, which I know there was some speculation if that meant a third confirmed signing or if there was legitimately just a turkey in his backyard. I like to think that he knew what was up. I mean, he probably did. I just want to hear him say it in that opening press conference for the season. But yeah, I mean, I thought the first two commits were really solid players. I think these two open up the possibility for this season to be a lot of fun. If you bring back Davion McKnight, Which, I mean, he has announced he's coming back. The pace he can play with, plus just the way he distributes and takes care of the ball with a couple – I mean, we saw what he did last year with one other shooter on the team, with a couple guys out there that can knock down shots and then him being able to create for himself with a little bit more space. I just think this team has the chance to be a lot of fun to watch, a very good offensive team and just kind of a team that dares the other team to also score 100 to beat them. I just think that these guys coming in, the pace and the shooting that they can play with, this year could be exciting.
Yeah, I think we're in like a forget the defense, let's score a million mode right now. I know that that's not the way that Miller's going to coach the team, but
did you watch his team 2 years ago?
I would say that there's going to be games where these guys crack 100 this year. Because it's not like when you bring in your backup guard with Trey Green, things are going to slow down. It might get more crazy. I guess one thing I would point out about Cogwell and Maddox is that this is both of their third school. And Conwell is a junior. So this will Maddox is out of eligibility, but Conwell has some left. But they're both playing at their third school now. So that's not intended as a judgment, just something worth pointing out. Hughley's also on his third. So these guys have a lot of experience from all over the place.
Yeah, which Conwell comes in with 2 years of eligibility left. The rest of these guys are on their final year of eligibility. So with, I don't know, with the way college basketball rosters are built right now, it seems like it's more of a year-to-year thing at this point rather than you bring in a player and, you know, develop him for a couple of years and then reap the benefits of that. It seems like these days it's more, let's build a new roster each off season. So we'll get into that in a second, but, the coaching carousel has kind of been spinning. It was a wild one. Obviously the Louisville job came open. Michigan came open. Those are both big jobs. Ohio State came open, which people say is a big job, and only one person has succeeded there in my lifetime. So I don't know. Maybe it's not. Anyway, but then, I mean, there was just this weird domino effect. So SMU is going to the ACC, which we can stop right there and just be like, it's weird. For some reason, SMU is joining the ACC, for money, although they're forgoing their TV deal. I think I read for 7 years, they're not taking any TV money from the ACC's TV deal. So that's wild. But anyway, they fired their coach. I don't know why. So they could go hire Andy Enfield. That opened USC, which was filled by Eric Musselman, and things got real wild then. John Calipari bolted from Kentucky to go to Arkansas, leaving Kentucky open. Now, Brad, you and I both went to college in Kentucky. We have friends who live in Kentucky or from Kentucky. The assertion has always been Kentucky can get whoever it wants. That was proven untrue. Kentucky hired Mark Pope, who I think is a fine basketball coach. He's never won an NCAA tournament game. He's only been to the NCAA tournament twice. I mean, is that a good hire, or should this be a wake-up call for Kentucky fans?
Can it be both? I'm with you. I think Pope is actually a pretty good coach. And I think that if Kentucky wasn't so hung up on name recognition and just was looking for a good coach who could turn them into what they think they are currently, I think that he would have been very close to the top of the list. And he was clearly close to the top of their list anyway, but he wasn't at the top of it. I think the Scott Drew thing was, you're just not going to get him. Kentucky's not going to get him. Duke's not going to get him. The court that his team plays on is named for him. Like, he's not going anywhere. He's, yeah. I think he fairly well quashed that when, with his chips and salsa picture, which somebody pointed out that, you know, he's the bold kind of leader for a program because he was eating chips and salsa in a white shirt. Then they went after Dan Hurley, who literally laughed when he got asked about it. I'd say it was embarrassing if I hadn't, like you, spent time in Kentucky and known that shame is not an emotion that anyone down there is going to feel regarding their team. I think Pope is a good hire. I think then that the fan base overreacted by showing up and be like, no, this is the guy we always wanted, and having a big, big thing for him. I know he's popular there because he played there, but it was mildly amusing to watch them try to figure out what to do on Twitter for that couple days where they kept going to people and people kept saying no. Back when he played there, I kind of liked UK. Those Tony Delk, Antoine Walker teams were interesting to me. Now, somewhere in there, they kind of lost it. And I think John Calipari was a big part of that. I guess hating Arkansas is now the new thing to do.
I don't know. To be honest, I have had such negative interactions with Kentucky fans. I want Arkansas in the Final Four this year. It'd be hilarious. because, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach who won a national championship there, and they ran him out of town. And the last coach who won a national championship there, they also ran out of town. So, I don't know. Part of me, I think Pope's a good coach. I don't know that that was necessarily a hiring process that that I thought was done well. Basically, they got publicly laughed at by Dan Hurley. They got semi-publicly laughed at by Scott Drew. Chip Gaines owned like 3/4 of their fan base on Twitter, which is embarrassing. And then they ended up with Mark Pope, who I think they went to right then after getting told no publicly twice, because they knew they could either go to him after getting told no publicly twice or getting told no publicly 12 times. Like, you look at the guys that they're like, why didn't we call Shaka Smart? Because Shaka Smart would also laugh at you. Like, he's, why would he leave Marquette to go to Kentucky? He's happy there. He already flamed out at a big brand. Like, what does he need to prove? Here's the thing that I think Kentucky fans have kind of missed is when they hired Calipari, it was a huge deal to coach at Kentucky because every game you play is on TV, and that's a huge recruiting boost. But now, I mean, you go to Brad Underwood and you go, every game you coach here will be on TV. Well, every game he coaches at Illinois is on TV. Like, what is the difference other than it's a different salary? And if you don't do well, someone is going to follow you down the sidewalk as you try to walk your dog filming you. You know, like, I don't know.
Well, hold up a second.
Yeah.
You're a dog guy, right? Like, you like dogs. I'm not particularly a dog guy. Can we call it walking your dog if you're pushing the dog in a stroller?
No, he had a stroller that I think he would put the dog in when they crossed the street, but the dog was out of the stroller when he was confronted on camera while walking it. I think that needs to be clarified. You know, I'm no John Calipari fan, but everybody's like, he pushes his dog in a stroller. Well, safe walking of your dog on a busy street, which that was, you know, it's a small dog. You don't know if people are going to see it. So, no, I don't think the dog wasn't in the stroller when they were filming him. I don't think, but, I think it was a safety thing to make sure his dog didn't get hit.
Okay. I'm going to cede to you on this not being a dog guy. If that is accepted best practice, then, you know, I guess good for John Calipari. I mean, nobody wants to see something bad happen to someone's pet. So good for, well, except Kentucky fans probably do want to see something bad happen to his pet now.
I think they did.
I had a friend, ironically, from Kentucky who had a pet boa constrictor. And I was like, kind of hope that thing dies because it made me real uncomfortable. Anyway, wow. Enough about Kentucky. I mean, this year we briefly touched on it about how angry people are getting on Twitter. But I mean, this year has seen a record number of transfer portal entries. Like I said, toward the start of the show, only three players who played for Xavier last year have not entered the transfer portal. I think Duke only has two players who played last year who haven't entered the transfer portal. It's at this point, I mean, there are a lot of teams who everybody entered the transfer portal. They don't have anyone coming back from last year's team. So the question is college basketball right now broken? A lot of people talk about this is unsustainable, things like that. Is this a bad thing for college basketball that basically the roster gets completely turned over every year at most school? I think there are like six schools right now in D1 who haven't had a transfer portal entry. Marquette's one of them, I'm pretty sure. But is college basketball broken? A lot of people will tell you right now it's broken because of the transfer portal and NIL. And if this is, you know, detrimental to the game, how do you fix it? Braden, you were shaking your head. You don't think college basketball is broken right now. Are you just saying that because people you don't like say it is?
You got me. You got me. I mean, I think it's just different. I mean, I've obviously not been around for as much college basketball as you guys have. Transfers have been a thing since I started watching Xavier. One of the big first transfers I remember being was Drew Lavender and then Jordan Crawford. Two guys that, you know, they panned out okay. And I mean, I know it's on a much bigger scale now. And I mean, schools have been chasing money since conferences have been a thing and money has been a thing. That's why part of why Xavier's in the new Big East now is after that imploded on itself. So as far as the students getting paid, because they're really good at basketball and they bring in a ton of money for their schools, we've talked about that before. I don't think that's a huge deal. You know, if players want to go somewhere where they can make a little more money, and, you know, play at a slightly bigger program, I mean, good for them. It's just different, you know? I mean, I don't think we're going to have another at Xavier, at least another Jason Love situation. If you watch a guy, you know, develop over 4 years from, you know, he's kind of eh, and then by the time he's a senior, you've seen how much he grows and, you know, he's beloved by a lot of fans. At least the three of us that I know of. So, I mean, it's different. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, though, because if you got a competent coach, he's going to rebuild your team like Miller has here. You know, he went out, reloaded. It's just a different thing. I don't think that it's a – they're never going to learn how to struggle through adversity. If you've played sports at any type of level, you've probably had to go through some pretty tough times. So – you may as well go somewhere where you're going to really enjoy it because you're also not going to be playing basketball for your entire life. Yeah, make a little money, jump around to a few different schools. I think it's fine. It is just going to be weird watching the first game of Xavier's season and having to relearn everybody's number and name. So I can count on being able to recognize Davion McKnight and hopefully Jerome Hunter and Zach Fremantle. And outside of that, I don't have to learn a lot of new people. Brad, you're old. You probably hate this.
I don't hate it, and I don't think college basketball is broken. I don't think hardly anybody actually thinks that. If you look at the ratings for the tournament, and especially the Final Four and the championship game, they're going to outpace anything that the NBA does all season, including the playoffs and the finals. People like college basketball. People love to watch college basketball. The Big East had multiple telecasts this year that are going to have better ratings than at least one of, historically based anyway, the NBA Finals games will. People like college ball. That's not going to change. I love it, obviously. I do think that we have hit a point where something needs to be recalibrated a little bit. I like the idea of the portal and NIL. These guys should be getting some recompense for the work they're doing, more than just a degree. But we're at a point where I saw a stat that almost half of the Southland Conference transferred. And, you know, there are so many guys in the portal, it gets hard to keep track of. Like Bryce said, Duke has two guys coming back. Xavier has three from last year's roster, technically five, coming back. I don't know exactly what needs to be done. I don't have a solution off the top of my head, but it is like it's tough to keep track of. And when you have guys who are going to be playing for their third or fourth school, it gets a little bit complicated. You also wonder if there are starting to be diminishing returns for the coaches in terms of trying to put together a roster. I mean, do you just go for guys who have 1 year of eligibility left and rebuild everything each year? Like you said, you know, who is going to be the next Jason Love? You know, you could easily have seen Kachi Enzi fill in that role a decade ago, as a guy who comes in, plays decently as a freshman in limited time, and then slowly gets better. But, you know, that's not going to happen now. And I think all three of us would probably be surprised if he ends his career at Penn State. And, you know, Xavier's benefiting from that this year. In the past, Ryan Conwell would have been a guy who probably graduated at Indiana State, or Dante Maddox, you know, who knows if he even ends up at Toledo. It gets to be a lot. I do think there is too much transferring. I've got some half-baked ideas of how you fix it, but something needs to be – it doesn't need to change completely. It just needs to be recalibrated a little bit. You know, to quote Tom Hanks from You've Got Mail, a movie that hardly any of our listeners will have seen at this point, it just needs some tweaking. You know –
It's a craft movie.
Right now, no, it is not. Why would you say something like that? Anyway, right now everybody's like Dave Chappelle in that movie and thinks it's absolutely necessary for them to leave. I like the idea on the whole is good, but it needs to be tuned up a little bit to work a little more effectively, because it has to be difficult to try to coach in this circumstance. The Des Claude thing jumps out a little bit because that is more money driven. But you know, guys like Djokovic and Nemishka and Shiani, you just can't build a dude up because, and through no fault of their own, why would Djokovic continue to try to get 10 minutes at Xavier when he can go to Charleston and start? And, you know, maybe he should have done that to begin with, but he's probably not going to be at Charleston in 2 or 3 years either. So something needs to get dialed in a little bit, I think, so coaches can have some roster continuity. And I do think that would help fans. And that is what drives this sport and what makes it still so popular, is because people tune in to watch it. And at some point in time, people are going to want to tune into a Xavier game and recognize that some of the same guys that they saw last year. You know, I got a text from our dad during our first game that just said, "Who are these dudes?" And, you know, Dad's not on the Twitterverse as most people. He's approaching 70 now, but still, he'd like to be able to tune into a game and recognize the people who are playing for his favorite team. So that's kind of where I am on it. I know I've presented a problem without a solution, which opens me up to some ridicule, which I'll accept. I think that some dudes involved in this need to sit down in a room and maybe hammer out a better situation.
I would actually say for most Xavier fans, generating excitement is probably not recognizing most of the guys that they saw last year. Because I don't know if you watched us, we were pretty bad. So I don't know that being able to, like, oh sweet, we get to see him run it back. There'd have been a feeling in like mid-November, just like, oh god, here we go again. But I mean, if you've seen, I mean, even on Twitter, and then I mean, there's those Twitter spaces that like Paul Fritschner will do. X fans are excited, and that's because our portal went well. I mean, it could go one of two ways. There's a lot of people very excited to see new guys. I would say, as far as the portal being fixed, one thing that I think needs to happen is the portal opening getting pushed back at least until after the tournament started. Because finishing up Selection Sunday, being like, yay, we get to watch the tournament in a few days, and it's just like 100 dudes have already put their name into the portal, and you're like, well, what are we paying attention to now? Like, if you don't make the tournament, then I guess it is kind of rebuild mode at that point. I mean, does anybody really care that much about the NIT? I guess if you make the Final Four of it, you get excited. That's me speaking from personal experience. But, yeah, pushing that back, I'd say until at least, you know, the second weekend after the Elite Eight's done, because, I mean, it's more of a distraction than anything else. And that's me speaking selfishly, but I like to just watch the tournament and enjoy it and not worry about, you know, who's jumped off of their team and, you know, is going to the draft or who's in the portal or whatever it may be. So that's one solution. So I guess I've already improved on Brad's presenting zero solutions.
Yeah, I think pushing back the opening of the portal is common sense. I don't think there's any compelling reason why it needs to open the day after Selection Sunday. You know, you can, if you know you're going to leave, you can wait 2 weeks and then tell everyone you're going to leave. Like, what difference does it make? I would kind of be players getting compensated for their work is good. Players having the freedom to choose where they play basketball is good. Like Braden said, you only have 4 years. You might as well make the most of it, playing somewhere where you actually really enjoy it and have the best chance to make money or set yourself up to make more money in the future by getting drafted. But I do think it is starting to hurt the fan experience a bit. I mean, the reality is, under the current circumstances, there's almost no chance that Trayvon Blewett and J.P. McKira spend 4 years at Xavier. They would have, if not both left, at least one of them left. And the memories that Xavier fans have from that era, which was not long ago, you know, I mean, those two guys are Xavier legends for life now. You know, JP came back as part of the Big East Legends series. And, you know, they're still celebrated at Xavier. But under the current rules, I don't think either one of them would have stayed 4 years. So I think, you know, that is a big part of the fan experience is being able to be attached to the players. And I think they should tweak some things. Backing up the start of the portal makes sense. I don't think that's going to really change anything as far as how many players get into it. But if you tweak some things and incentivize sticking around in some way, you know, I think that would be good. But I don't think, you know, people are like, get rid of the portal. Well, no, that's not a solution. You know, we want college basketball players to be able to make the most of their 4 years of college basketball. And so the portal is good for that. So anyway, Speaking of the portal, Xavier has added four guys out of it. We've broken them down. They're exciting players. What, if anything, does Xavier need to add at this point? Do you think they should be done? Would you like to see them add something? Braden, go ahead.
Oh, I think if anything, yeah, sorry, that was a weird noise. I'm stretching the back out and trying to kind of lead in at the same time. That wasn't a happy marriage right there. I think if anything, I think the backcourt is set-ish at this point. You got Trey Green and Dave Young coming back. Obviously, we've got some transfers in. I think if anything, you need to go out and get Jack Nungy back or recreate him somehow. Because all the bigs we have right now, Fremantle, I don't know if in his several surgeries he's had, they've turned him into a good defender. If so, that'd be awesome. Jerome Hunter is an excellent defender at the two through the four, but I think any seven-footer would definitely give him issues. If we could just get a big man with a lot of length, a little bit of a rim-protecting presence, I think that would be a huge get for us because Hughley, not exactly known as a shot blocker. He's a big physical dude, but he doesn't pack a whole ton of people. But maybe just some added rim protection, I think, would be awesome. And I miss Jack Nungy. So if we can get another 7-foot dude who's real skinny and smooth, I'd love it.
Yeah, but it doesn't block a whole lot of people. You mean that John Hughley had a lower block rate last year than, like, Daylon Swain? Or
that's Sasha exactly Swain. I looked at the stats, so yeah, thank you.
Yeah, he's right. Real close to in line with Des Claude's block rate. He was slightly better than Quincy Olivari, which is good. And Trey Green didn't have any blocks last year, so he's not the answer down there.
We probably hack them before they can get a shot away. So I mean, he does do something.
I agree with Braden. I think we need you need another big. I don't think that Fremantle and Hunter play the entire season. One of them, or maybe both of them, are going to be injured and miss significant time again. In my opinion, just looking at their injury history. So you need another top tier big, I think. At least a guy who can play 20 minutes a game. And yeah, if he can block a few shots, we have desperately few people who are going to do that right now.
Say it with me. Deontay Miles.
What about a guy who was 39th in the nation in offensive rebounding last year, block rate of 6%, you know, decently effective around the rim? Abu Usman comes back.
That will slap you in the face. No disrespect, Abu, if you're listening, but, you know.
That's pretty disrespectful, to be honest with you.
I think it might be best for everyone if Abu does not do that. You know, I'm not sure Abu was that happy by the end. I mean, another rim protector, Kachi Enzi type, since we can't have Kachi Enzi anymore, since the portal ruined everything, Western society as a whole. Yeah, somebody, you know, they were in on Justin Abson. That didn't work out. You know, like Brandon Garrison's still out there. Somebody who's going to protect the rim. I agree. I don't know who that is. I don't have any insight as to who Xavier is about to get. Although some dude tweeted like 2 days ago Xavier was about to get someone, and they haven't. So anyway. I don't know. If you want to hear something funny about the transfer portal, and I'm sure there's probably about to be a whole bunch of whining to you guys' immediate West, Posh Alexander is in the transfer portal as of today, hilariously. So possibly heading back to St. John's? I don't know. I'm really not sure where Posh is going to go. I think it's been fairly well established at this point. He's not a great shooter. So I don't know. Who wants a guard who plays great defense and doesn't score a lot? Anyway, mostly it's funny because I think Butler was counting on having him back. So, yeah, I would say Xavier, a defensive-minded big man would be good, but as they're set up now, I think based on who's on the roster right now, who's on rosters right now, Xavier is ranked 9th on Bartorvik. That's going to change, obviously, as the season gets closer and some of these big players come out of the portal. But they have a good roster right now. I think adding one more big guy would be, you know, then you're talking about a team that could possibly compete at the top of the Big East and win the Big East again by winning the most games, which is something that, you know, Xavier, Villanova, Marquette, UConn, they've done that since the Big East reformed. Providence has not. They've not won the Big East by winning the most games, and I think people forget that sometimes. So anyway, last but not least here, we've got a final quick hit because it's a pretty big story, I think, in college sports media. Reggie Bush is getting his Heisman Trophy back after they stole it from him because he profited off his name, image, and likeness, which is now, of course, legal. So they took away his Heisman Trophy. Now they're getting it back. What sports wrong would you like to see righted? Historical sports wrong would you like to see? I didn't say what historical wrong would you like to see righted because, you know, that's kind of a can of worms. We're sticking to sports. Purely sports. Braden, you would like to see England stripped of the 1966 World Cup because they cheated, correct? No, I'm kidding.
Gosh, damn,
right. Braden, go ahead.
If you are kicking it to me first, I'd like to start with one that does not need to be righted, and that's Armando Galarraga's perfect game. I could have thrown a near perfect game against that Indians team. You don't deserve it. You choked. Get over it. I've seen that one on Twitter so much. That guy was a pretend big leaguer. This one, I don't necessarily know how you write it, but this made me mad at the time, at the ripe old age of 9. In the qualifiers for the 2010 World Cup, the Republic of Ireland was playing France. In the second leg, Ireland was up 1-0. The game should have been going to penalties, which granted is kind of a crapshoot at that point. Right up until ball came across the box for Thierry Henry to, fair play to him. He hit Shea Given with a hezzy that would have made MJ buckle. The issue being that he used his left hand to keep the ball in play before playing a square ball to William Gallas, who I know Brad hates, and France ended up going through. France then got to the World Cup in South Africa and decided to have a complete diaper meltdown as a team, got knocked out in the group stage. Lots of people got very, I guess it wasn't even mad online back then, mad in the press, mad in the newspaper, whatever their version of it was. They essentially bickered for a few weeks and then went home after embarrassing themselves and their nation. I know you can't go back and put Ireland in that World Cup and replay everything because Robbie Keane was old then, and I don't think his legs would be up for it now. But that really hacked me off back then. So I guess take away France's 2010 World Cup appearance and give it to Ireland, who, let's be honest, probably would have gotten knocked out in the group stage too, but would have been a heck of a lot more fun to watch. Yeah, sorry. I just needed to get that out of my system after all these years.
Obviously, Ireland, known for their free-flowing and entertaining style.
I mean, I liked Robbie Keane. I liked Damian Duff. They had a young Aidan McGeady coming off the bench, a guy who has a move named after him and also wasn't very good. I mean, it had been more entertaining than watching the French just essentially yell at each other for 2 weeks.
Are you sure it would have been? Because that was pretty entertaining.
Ah,
say, I feel like several of their players went home and then they banned their manager from coming to one of their practices. It was nuts.
Okay, it may have been hilarious. I'm a fan of the beautiful game and unadulterated sport. That's why I hate the transfer portal so much. Just kidding. I liked that Ireland team. Yes, they would not have been very fun to watch. They lined up in a 4-4 freaking 2 against France, and they'd have done the same thing at the World Cup. So that's how the sport's supposed to be played, dang it.
Hey.
The obvious one to me is the hand of God, but I think everybody kind of agrees that was bad. I actually, the one that came to mind for me was Armando Galarraga.
Boo.
But in large part because of the way that he handled it, I would like to see it somehow made right. Even immediately after the game, when it was obvious that Jim Joyce had made a bad call, Galarraga was pretty chill about it. He just said sometimes people miss calls. Kind of the bummer for him is that if that happens now, he gets his perfect game because they just review the play. It's obvious that Jason Donald wasn't even close to beating the throw. I can remember where I was listening to this game, and Tom Hamilton yelled his big not in time, and then there's a long pause, and then he goes, oh, where you were immediately aware that the call was not correct. Jim Joyce actually handled it well. I don't know, Bri, you'll know more about him as an umpire because you know a lot about baseball, but he handled it well. When they interviewed him after the game, he actually broke down and said that he felt awful about taking away the perfect game. He immediately said, unlike multiple umpires this week, including the one who threw out Aaron Boone because a fan in New York was yelling and then refused to admit he made a mistake, the first thing Jim Joyce said was, I did not get the call correct. He said it was the biggest call of his career, and he messed it up. And I don't know a whole lot about him, but I thought that was a stand-up thing. It would be really nice to see his call to get erased and Galarraga to get his, 5 minutes of fame. He wasn't much of a pitcher. He made $4 million playing baseball, though. He handed out the lineup card 2 days later to Jim Joyce. They gave each other a hug. They both started crying. There's been a book afterwards that they collaborated on. And they both did an interview with The Athletic in which they were classy about it. So it would have been nice to see that get overturned. I think everybody kind of credits Galarraga with a perfect game, but ultimately in the scorebooks, Jason Donald has a base hit for running almost all the way to first base before the ball got there.
I'd like to thank Brad for, doing a lot of research on this and making me look like a complete and utter tool for saying that I don't think Galarraga should get a perfect game.
Well, to be fair, everyone already thought that before Brad even spoke. So you don't need to be mad at Brad about it. You are the one who chose to act like that. Jim Joyce, actually, yeah. He first came to prominence because, Brad, you'll remember this, he was who got between John Urshbeck and Roberto Alomar during the spitting incident when John Urshbeck seemed to want to go to the Orioles dugout and kill Roberto Alomar. Jim Joyce was in the middle of that. And I think he's pretty widely regarded as a pretty good umpire. Mine is going to be baseball related as well. I think the Baseball Hall of Fame needs a rejigging because there are people in the Baseball Hall of Fame currently who do not belong in there and people who are not in the Baseball Hall of Fame who do belong in there. I don't think you can make a intelligent case that a player like Lou Whitaker or Dick Allen or Kenny Lofton doesn't belong in the Baseball Hall of Fame. But who does have a plaque in there is Cap Anson, who I'm going to focus in on because Cap Anson is the reason that baseball was segregated in the first place. He was one of baseball's biggest stars at the time, refused to take the field when Fleetwood Walker was playing against his team. And because of that, baseball became segregated. Cap Anson also bet on baseball. Not for nothing, he also dated a 13-year-old for a while. This is a person who has a plaque in Cooperstown when we have, you know, not put plaques in there for people who were very, very good for baseball. And in the case of Lou Whitaker and Kenny Lofton, huge parts of the communities that they played in. I mean, Whitaker only played in Detroit. Lofton played in Cleveland and was very widely loved by that community. So I think that wrong needs righted. Cap Anson doesn't deserve a plaque in the Hall of Fame because of his conduct. And I think Lou Whitaker, Kenny Lofton, Dick Allen, there are a lot of players who do. The other thing is Major League Baseball needs to let Cleveland have a Larry Doby Day. They've stood in the way of this. Historically, they have not allowed Cleveland to all wear number 14 on the day Larry Doby made his debut. And that is insane to me that they would put their foot down like that to bar Cleveland from honoring Larry Doby, who broke the color barrier in the American League. So I think Major League Baseball and the Hall of Fame need to take a good long look at themselves and make some things right. That's my opinion, but it's also fact. So anyway, maybe not a yuck yuck, but it's wrong. It's wrong. And, you know, I'm like Scott Drew when he came into Baylor and said, listen, rule number one, no more murders. People aren't going to like it, but I am going to say it anyway. So that is it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back as Xavier continues to work in the transfer portal and the roster for next season continues to come together. We'll be right back.